home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Live from Hollywood, it's Rated LGBT Radio with your hosts, Garrett Miller and Rob Watson.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. You are listening to Rated LGBT Radio. And I am your host, Rob Watson. Thank you to Garrett Miller for executive producing the show. We will be changing the platform, actually, very shortly, and I will take over that role of executive producing as well. But thanks to Garrett Miller for all the work that he has done and set us up in the past previously. So this week, oh my gosh, this week, so much has been going on. For the LGBTQ2 community, really significant case has gone before the Supreme Court and been argued out. We are fortunate tonight. We are going to get one of the strongest legal voices around to help us go through this, and that would be Shannon Price Minter, the legal director for the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Shannon has been in the game, if you will, for a long, long time. That isn't to say he's old. He's very young, but still, he's been in the trenches and was, in fact, a lead counsel for same-sex couples in the landmark California marriage equality case. So Shannon is well-versed with the Supreme Court, can give us a read on what happened, maybe give us some predictions about what the outcome may be, and the ramifications of which are probably more significant and more serious than most people are thinking. Because after all, the case looks like it's just about baking a cake. And there's a lot to that cake recipe. And so we're going to get into that. We're going to be joined, and Shannon will be joined with our esteemed panel of journalists, Brody Levesque, Karen Oakham, and Don Enos, and we are thrilled to have them on board. Before we get into that subject at hand, however, I do want to go to Brody Levesque directly and get some update on some of the other news that has been taking place this week. Brody, good evening.
Good evening. Today has been one of those days where it just came at everybody fast and furious. The two most significant events, obviously, were the resignation of Minnesota Senator Al Franken. Now, albeit that will be in the next few weeks, but he's announced his intent to resign from the U.S. Senate as a direct result of the allegations of sexual harassment. And then later this afternoon, earlier this evening, Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona, who is a member of the Freedom Caucus in the House and was originally elected during the wave of the Tea Party types, also sent out an announcement that he is leaving as well. So it's been one of those days, and of course the discussion now in a lot of cycles is that if this sense of responsibility is flowing this way, why have we heard nothing from Senate leadership about the administration, in particular the president? And the White House, of course, is deflecting on the issue. So this is kind of where we've been sitting at. The Trump administration also requested a U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals judge to put a stay on the court order she issued to the Defense Department to enact the trans service accessions policy after the first of the year. The Trump administration is appealing that. She has not obviously rendered a decision on that. So today has been a relatively busy day, Rob.
Very busy. And for my journalist friends here, you guys must have been working feverishly on all that stuff. And obviously, we could go into almost any one of those subjects and have plenty to talk about, but we will avoid that temptation. One that I do want to go to, though, I want to welcome Karen Oakham to the show. And Karen, you're going to although the connection is being a little slow here. But when Karen comes on, Karen has some updates on another significant legal entity that has been huge for the LGBTQ community, and that is Lambda Legal and some changes there. Karen, are you on? I am getting this funny little dot there. So we may go back to Karen later in the show. Let me try this again. Sorry. Technical difficulties, folks. It's when the button doesn't do what it says it's supposed to do.
I've had that problem today.
Well,
too.
We will probably come back to Karen. And Karen, if you're listening, you may want to drop and recall in because that line seems to be a little bit funky. But I want to also welcome to the show tonight Don Ennis. Sorry, pronounced your name wrong at the top of the show. Also, Shannon, welcome to the show. And those connections are still connecting up. So, Brody, while we're waiting for those connections to come through,
sure.
Can you give a little overview of the this case and the Majestic Cakes and where this all came from?
The baseline argument, and Shannon is obviously the expert on this. I am not a lawyer, and nor do I play one on TV. No, seriously, the baseline here seems to be that they want to split hairs in terms of definitions when it comes down to the LGBTQI community. Now, I've had attorneys tell me that the baseline coming from the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is the Christian right law group that represented Jack Phillips, the baker, in a Masterpiece Cake case, is maintaining that for people of faith, in other words, the Christian right and others, lesbian, gay, bisexual individuals are behavior. They're not a subject class of people. Transgender, gender nonconforming, and queer people are a political construct or a type of a mental health concern or issue. Now, this is how they view it. The bottom line argument, and again, Shannon's going to have to be the one to weigh in on this because he is the attorney, is that being LGBTQI is not an immutable characteristic. In other words, it's not the same as being black. It's not the same as being Latino. It's not the same as being Asian. So what we're ending up with here is, as far as my lawyer friends are telling me, a rather specious argument legally in that regard. The problem is that when we're looking at this issue is it really does come down to splitting hairs on this. This is not the same as what we saw with the marriage equality decisions that were handed down by the high court in the Windsor case or the Obergefell case. This is completely different. They're essentially asking the high court to allow discriminatory practices by businesses against this would be more than just the LGBTQI community. It could affect Muslims and a bunch of other people as well, based on their really held religious beliefs. Now, that argument does run contrary to even the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And again, there are folks that would say, and I've got attorneys that are telling me this, that the Supreme Court may not, you know, even take that argument. However, the other part of it is that the wording, my understanding is, and I've read the document coming from the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, which issued the ruling in the first place, was a little discriminatory towards the baker in terms of the overall overarching view of his beliefs. So this one becomes a little bit sticky. And again, this is really... In full transparency, I'm not a lawyer. So this is just my lay understanding as a political reporter.
Well, good news, Brody. Hopefully our technical problems have been solved, and we should have Don Ennis on, and Shannon Minter. Are you folks on with us?
This is Shannon here. Yeah, I can hear you all just fine. Hopefully you can hear
Shannon,
me.
Shannon, I'm here too.
We can now hear you. Good. Yeah. Sorry about that. We had, we're dealing with computers and all sorts of deep, deep infrastructure, but we brought you all on, and Karen's line is making its funny noise, so hopefully we'll have her on as well. Shannon, if you can give us some legal overview of Brody just described kind of some of the basics of the case. How did this case make its way to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. And Don, I heard you say you're on too. I'm so glad you are on. This case started out in Colorado, and it was a gay couple who were planning their wedding and were, you know, excited as people are when you're planning a wedding. It's a stressful but exciting time. And they went to a local bakery. They were familiar with the, they've been to the bakery many other times, and went to and sat down with the baker to ask him to help them, plan their wedding cake. And then were very shocked when the baker told them, and they just had no idea this was coming, that he would not, because of his religious beliefs, that he would not make a wedding cake for a same-sex couple. So, that's a pretty crushing and humiliating experience. One of the men had his mom there with him, and I think, having her have to hear that and witness them being literally turned away from just for being gay, I think made that experience, even worse. So they filed a complaint with the Colorado Human Rights Commission and, said, hey, this baker is discriminating on the basis of sexual orientation, which is prohibited under Colorado state law. And the commission ruled in their favor. At some point, a very right-wing, one of the most extreme anti-LGBT groups in the country, the so-called Alliance Defending Freedom, got involved and began representing the baker. So Alliance Defending Freedom has just jumped all over this case and appealed it to the Colorado Court of Appeals. The Colorado Court of Appeals affirmed the decision of the commission. I mean, it's so straightforward. It's just like an obvious case of sexual orientation discrimination. There's no question about it. And the baker doesn't even deny that he said that he would not, he wouldn't make them a cake. And then the Colorado Supreme Court declined to hear it, and then the Alliance Defending Freedom asked the U.S. Supreme Court to review the decision, and they agreed to do it. It was that which is a very big deal. These are some, as Brody was laying out, the issues in this case are of enormous potential negative significance for our community. So we were all very focused on trying to make sure the Supreme Court got the very best arguments possible. The ACLU is representing the couple or represented the couple before the U.S. Supreme Court. They did a very good job. And there were a number of friend of the court briefs weighing in and try to make sure the court clearly understands just how devastating it would be if they reverse the Colorado court's decision and for the first time ever in the history of our country say that there is some sort of constitutionally compelled exception to anti-discrimination laws, especially if they were to hold that there's some exception that somehow applies only to gay people.
Shannon, the court looked at religious freedom, quote-unquote, many, many years ago and laid down some principles. And this was around the time when, with Utah and, ironically, another marriage question with their polygamy. And I know that one of the basis of the slippery slope that they were looking at then was human sacrifice as being a religious, deeply held concept that obviously could not be justified. Will the court be going back to some of those same principles as they examine this?
I sure hope they do. one of the interesting things from a legal point of view about this case is that the baker has always been very clear that the reason he wouldn't bake the cake was because of his religious beliefs. And so the most logical way to challenge the Colorado Human Rights Commission decision, if he was going to do that, would have been to say, you know, hey, this violates my right to religious freedom. I have a right under the First Amendment, free exercise clause, free exercise of religion, to live, you know, not just to have these beliefs, but to live my life consistently with my religious values. The problem with making that claim, though, is exactly the cases that you're alluding to. The U.S. Supreme Court, for quite a while now, has said that as long as a law applies to everyone and was not enacted for the purpose of suppressing a particular religious belief, you know, as long as there's some legitimate reason for the law that isn't about suppressing religion, then the fact that obeying the law may actually conflict with someone's religious values is irrelevant. Like, that is not unconstitutional. And an anti-discrimination law is the textbook example of a law that, of course, is enacted for a very good purpose, to prevent the harms caused by discrimination. It's got nothing to do with trying to suppress anybody's religious beliefs, and the laws apply to everyone. So he was going to have a really uphill battle with that argument. So that's why we've gotten into this very strange world that Brody was sketching out, where what the Alliance Defending Freedom did, instead of pressing religious freedom argument, they came up with some very novel free speech arguments. And they thought, I'm sure they just thought, well, this case is a loser under the free exercise clause, so let's see if we can come up with something else. So that's how we got into this whole weird world of calling this baker a cake artist. And they tried to claim that making a cake is a kind of artistic expression that's protected by the First Amendment, and that the government can't force a cake artist to use his artistry to make a cake that sends a message that he doesn't want to send. So that's how we got into that whole line of argument.
Wow, that's intense. Don, I'm going to go to Don. We may have I'm getting some signals. We may have lost her. Don, are you still on board here? Apologize on the technical stuff. Karen is on board, though. I want to introduce Karen Oakham to the conversation. Karen, good evening.
Hi, can you hear me now?
We can hear you now. I know you've been listening intently. And I do want to do one back step, because you had some important legal news having to do with Lambda Legal that you wanted to point out. And if we could do that quickly, that would be great.
Well, it's just there's some rather jarring news from my perspective, which is that John Davidson, who has been with Lambda Legal for Lord knows how long, for 2 decades, has decided to leave. He wouldn't explicitly tell me why, but there's a lot of changes going on at Lambda Legal now. And he says that he's going to, he's looking for other opportunities, whatever they may be. I just did a whole huge piece for the Los Angeles Blade on some background about John Davidson, because a lot of people do not know how important this guy is and how he's actually impacted the national response to LGBT rights. I'm sure Shannon would probably agree with me. I mean, I suspect. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Hi, Shannon, by the way.
Hey, Karen, I sure do agree with you, yes, and I'm so glad you're writing that article, because John's accomplishments are monumental and people should know about them.
Yeah, so yeah, it's really crazy. It's, what's happening with institutional memory, but anyway, so that's the really major news. And I hope people will go to the losangelesblade.com, or just actually losangelesblade.com, and under politics and see the story about John Davidson.
Yeah, definitely check that out. And, hopefully we'll have some more discussion about John in the future, because I did read your article on it, and his work has been incredible, and people should know about that, whatever reason he's leaving currently, his past and his accomplishments are intense.
Brody, you have a question for Shannon.
Yeah, Shannon, let's talk for a minute about the justices. The impression I got from the two lawyers that I knew that were inside the courtroom listening to the oral arguments was that this decision in the ruling process, which we're probably not going to see until the end of June at the end of term, didn't go well. Normally, there's a little bit of telegraphing by the nine justices, but this time, the type of telegraphing that was there, it looks like this one could go a little ugly. Let's take it from your point as a, you know, as a lawyer. What's the options here? I mean, let's go worst case scenario. Where does this go and what do we do?
Well, you know, for what it's worth, I have a much more optimistic view of how that argument went. And that is very sincere. I just explained the kind of novel free speech arguments that the Baker was making, or Alliance Defending Freedom was making on his behalf. And I think that what was encouraging to me is that it was very clear that Justice Kennedy was not persuaded by those arguments. And it was also clear that the other justices that were, you know, one would expect to be with us on a case like this were also not buying those arguments. So I think it is likely that we have a majority, five justices, who are going to reject the free speech claims. And that, I mean, that was where the real danger lay, or does lie in this case. If the court were to say that, you know, making a cake, a wedding cake for a gay couple is free speech, and that would eviscerate every single anti-discrimination law that protects gay people in this country. And it would open, you know, there's no way you could limit that to weddings. I mean, it would just open up a whole Pandora's box of exceptions to discrimination, anti-discrimination protections for gay people. So I was encouraged by Justice Kennedy's skepticism of that claim. Now, what scared everyone and what has got, you know, many people who were there really nervous is that Justice Kennedy was so blunt and direct about being very upset about the Colorado Human Rights Commission decision. I mean, he very flatly said, hey, you were intolerant. You're not being tolerant of this Mr. Phillips, the Baker's religious beliefs. But what emerged through the argument is apparently, though, what Justice Kennedy was talking about there was some pretty harsh language that had been used by one of the commissioners in the written opinion. And the commissioner had just openly been very critical of the Baker's religious beliefs and said that he was using his belief to justify discrimination in a way that was just as hateful and objectionable as people using religion to justify the Holocaust and slavery. I mean, that is a pretty provocative thing to say. And that's what was upsetting Justice Kennedy.
Well, let me ask you this, and then I'll throw it back to Rob. Talking about that particular issue for just a minute, Shannon, I mean, we pretty much have got a line on what Justices Alioto, Thomas, and Gorsuch will do. Breyer, either direction. What about the Chief Justice of the United States? How did you get a read on the Chief Justice or no?
You know, he did not say a lot. He was not one of the more active justices in the case. But, you know, he did ask some questions. He was playing devil's advocate, I think, with both sides. It will be interesting. I think that's going to be one of the most interesting aspects of this decision, is to see where the Chief Justice comes down. I mean, he's a very smart man, and it's hard to imagine that he would want to open the door to creating free speech exceptions to anti-discrimination laws. I mean, he has to very well understand what that would lead to. I mean, that would be a dramatic, radical, complete restructuring of the entire edifice of U.S. anti-discrimination law. If he's willing to do that, to go along with what I hope will be a dissent that accepts those arguments, you know, that's going to tell us a lot about what we can expect from him in the future.
Okay, that sounds good. I'll throw it to Don. Don?
Shannon, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for all the work you do.
Oh, thanks, Don.
Now, I've got to ask you back about what you were talking about, Kennedy. And most of the conservative writers and a lot of the mainstream journalists really seem focused on this whole idea that Kennedy was defending how Mr. Phillips felt he was treated by the Colorado officials, that he was not given a tolerant reaction. They were not respectful. Is that a seed? Is that something that we should worry about? And then I want to just ask one other question if I can, but let me just get your answer on that in terms of Kennedy's scolding of Colorado officials.
I don't think there's reason to be concerned about that. I think that in terms of how it might affect the outcome of the case, it may not affect the outcome at all. Like, it may be that Justice Kennedy goes along with the majority that rejects the free speech claims and affirms the decision below, and he may write a concurring opinion where he expresses again his concern about those statements being made by a commissioner, but it doesn't affect the outcome of the case. Or, depending on how concerned he is, he probably could marshal a majority of, you know, of conservative justices on the court to vacate the Colorado decision and send it back down to the Colorado Human Rights Commission for them to decide the case again. Because what they could say is that, you know, because of that statement by the commissioner, there's reason to be concerned that anti-religious bias may have tainted the decision-making process.
And then we'd put it back to square one, I guess.
It would, you know, but that would, you know, that would not create any negative precedent that could be used to harm gay people or really anyone else. I mean, that would be that would not be a bad outcome. It would just mean that the Colorado Human Rights Commission had to decide the case again, and this time they would need to be very careful that they weren't relying on or appearing to rely on any negative bias about the Baker's religious beliefs.
Right, and that's where I go to my second question, which is real quick because I want to get Karen in here. But, you know, my dear friend, and I'm sure yours, Jenny Boylan, wrote a wonderful op-ed in the New York Times, which was eviscerated by David French in the National Review. His basic bottom line was sexual revolutionaries are asking the court to overturn generations of constitutional precedent to allow the state to come to advance ideas they find reprehensible. Now, that whole argument just thanks, and I'm wondering, how do we counter that?
Right. Well, you know, I think that this is where it's so important. I mean, this is actually where I think Justice Kennedy has a good point, if you really want to know. I think we do need to be very careful to be respectful of people's religious beliefs, including people with conservative religious beliefs, including those who have religious beliefs that that say that gay people shouldn't marry. As long as they're willing to acknowledge that we have a right to be free and to have the same equal protections that other people have, and that we have a legal right to marry, you know, we need to be able to deal with the fact that some people are going to have their own religious beliefs that are, you know, different than what we think, and we need to be careful about how we interact with conservative religious communities. But you know, that said, the bottom line principle here is that everybody has the right to be treated as an equal citizen in of this country and an equal member of the society, and, you know, laws that apply to straight people have to be applied equally to gay people. And that, you know, look, that includes anti-discrimination laws. And we've got to get over this idea. And this is where the Alliance Defending Freedom has caused a lot of mischief, because they've really promoted this new idea that no one ever thought before, that selling something to somebody is somehow you're sending a message that you approve of the person buying your product. We don't think that. We don't think that when a baker sells a wedding cake, he's not expressing any view about whether the couple's marriage is a good marriage or whether he thinks they should get married. No one thinks that. Just like when you make a baker makes a birthday cake, he's not personally wishing happy birthday to whoever the cake is for. They're just selling a product, and any message involved in the cake is the message of the buyer, not the seller. So there's a lot of confusing and incorrect ideas that the Alliance Defending Freedom has managed to spread based on this case, and we need to just kind of patiently refute them.
Excellent. Karen, you had a question for Shannon.
Oh, I've got several, but let me just start out with two. I think that this whole thing seriously got blown up with the Hobby Lobby case. And who gets to determine what a sincere religious belief is? But my question is really about this whole, and Shannon, I think that we kind of had this discussion before, so forgive me if I'm going over old ground and it just didn't stick with me, but, you know, this whole thing about protected classes. Religion is a protected class, presumably because it's in the First Amendment. But religion is an immutable, not immutable characteristic. You know, you have people seeking religious conversions all the time. Ivanka Trump is one. So I don't understand why people are so stuck on this whole notion of, you know, there has to be an immutable characteristic in order for you to be in a protected class, like race and maybe sex. And, you know, I just don't understand that. Could you kind of explain that to me? And then I want to do a follow-up about behavior.
Sure, I can try. It's true that a characteristic does not have to be immutable in order to get heightened constitutional protection, and religion is a very good example of that. But what one could say, I guess, is that when a characteristic is immutable, that increases the likelihood that it will get heightened protection. So it's not necessary, but it can be sufficient, or at least it can be a very favorable aspect of a characteristic in terms of, you know, determining whether or not it gets heightened protection. So that's why you see so much focus on that issue of, is sexual orientation immutable or not? I will say that, that is one of the things, speaking of John Davidson, you know, that's one of the goals that John has had for a very long time, was to try to convince the courts that sexual orientation is an immutable characteristic, because it is just so incredibly helpful in terms of getting constitutional protection. And we have now finally done that. I mean, building on John's work and other people's work, the U.S. Supreme Court in the Obergefell decision held very, very squarely and very clearly, and more than once in the decision, that sexual orientation is immutable. Mm-hmm. So that is now a very well-established part of our U.S. constitutional law.
But that doesn't seem to be, it seems to have kind of evaded Kennedy in this. I mean, this whole concept of, why did he have a problem with the whole notion of identity? I mean, when you say a gay couple, you are identifying a sexual orientation. Why did he, and this isn't even a behavior question, it's just a follow-up to this. But why did he have such an issue with the whole notion of identity?
You know, I don't think he did at all. I mean, he certainly, he of all people should understand that, because he should understand that there's no way to distinguish between the quote-unquote conduct of marrying somebody of the same sex and the status of being gay. I mean, the only people that marry people of the same sex are people who are gay. And, you know, it's kind of one and the same, and the court has recognized that repeatedly in prior cases, that you really cannot, when it comes to sexual orientation, you can't meaningfully distinguish between status and the conduct of being intimate or being in a relationship or marrying someone. I think he understands that very well. And I assume you're alluding to there was just one moment in the argument, and I really do think he was just playing devil's advocate at that moment where he pushed back a little bit on the attorney representing the couple and suggested that he was being, I believe the word that Justice Kennedy used was too facile.
Tell us what did he say. So this is why I got so upset about it. It was an exchange with David Cole, who was the ACLU attorney representing the couple. And David Cole says, the public accommodations law does not say you must treat everybody. It says you cannot discriminate on the basis of protected categories. And Kennedy says, well, but this whole concept of identity is a slightly, suppose he says, look, I have nothing against gay people. He says, but I just don't think they should have a marriage because that's contrary to my beliefs. It's not their identity. It's what they're doing. I think it's your identity thing is just too facile.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming from Kennedy.
It just threw
me for a loop.
Yes, no, it's disconcerting to hear Justice Kennedy asking that question in that way, but I do really think he is largely playing devil's advocate there because he knows very well that there's no way to separate the identity of being gay from the desire to or conduct of entering in, you know, marrying a person of the same sex. I think he was just trying to explore, the concept there that, you know, that for some very, you know, conservative religious people, as we all painfully know all too well, you know, some conservative religious people think that it is wrong for people of the same sex to marry, and they're disturbed by that, conduct, quote unquote. And I just think Kennedy was just pushing Cole on that, you know, just trying to see what David Cole might be able to say back to help the court understand the issue. I really don't think that Kennedy was in any way endorsing the idea that there's some distinction between the two, between the identity and marrying somebody of the same sex. I really don't think he was.
Well, I'm reading a transcript, so you know, I'm hearing the inflection in my, you know, in my head. So I don't know. Listen, I know the other people want to talk, so I'm going to save my behavior question until later if I get a chance. Thanks,
okay, well,
Shannon.
Yeah, we'll come back to you on that, Karen. Shannon, I wanted to ask you, and this has been brought out in the discussion already that we've had, but as an observer of this from the outside for a long time, my sort of man-on-the-street observation is that this is really a one-man decision, this case, it is going to be how Anthony Kennedy decides, and that's pretty much the way it'll go. We might get some surprises of somebody joining in and but it's still likely to be that. He has been the pivotal person in the original Colorado case where gay people were kind of identified as a protected class. He was the key pivotal person in the Hobby Lobby case, and he was a pivotal person in marriage equality. Based on his past, what would you as a betting lawyer put on how he's going to pull all of just past Kennedy viewpoints into this case? What would your prediction be?
Right, and you are so right. This case completely hinges on Justice Kennedy and how he votes, and that has been true in every single case affecting LGBT people, really since he's been on the court, and he has authored every single decision that affirms the rights and equality and dignity of LGBT people. Every one of those decisions has been authored by Justice Kennedy, and that should give people a lot of comfort. I mean, this is his constitutional legacy, and you know, there's all kinds of reports that he wants to leave the court and he wants to retire soon, and it's really unimaginable that he would, right before he leaves the court, issue a decision that effectively undermines everything that he is worked for, and his entire legacy when it comes to gay people. I cannot imagine that he will do that. On the other hand, he is also one of the court's leading advocates of religious liberty, and he does take a very expansive view of the First Amendment. So I think we're going to see both of those things, his deep concern for the constitutional equality of gay people and his probably equally deep, maybe deeper, concern for the importance of religious liberty and of ensuring that, you know, people's religious beliefs are respected and protected. We're going to see both of those themes come through in his decision. And but I don't think he's going to lift up religious liberty at the expense of gay people. I think he's going to affirm the decision below, or if he reverses it, it's not because it will be only because he wants the Colorado Human Rights Commission to kind of do a do-over that isn't in any way tainted by bias against religious people. I don't think he'll do anything that creates a harmful new precedent that will hurt gay people going forward.
Well, wow, I can't tell you how great I really love what you just said, and I hope that's exactly accurate. I'm ready to go to the bank with that. Dawn, I think you have a question.
Yeah, Shannon, I'm so grateful for your optimism and your legal expertise, but I'm a skeptic. I'm a journalist. And this proceeding plus the Monday decision by Supreme Court to not act in Pigeon versus Turner, the Houston case, it didn't make me panic, but it did make me feel I need to be prepared to panic. And I'm wondering, how do you address it? It just seemed like this was a week in which our victories, our milestones achieved under the Obama administration are being whittled away. And I'm wondering, what can you tell me to make me understand that Pigeon versus Turner, that the way this oral argument went, is not reason to prepare for panic?
Well, I can be very reassuring on this one. And by the way, I am giving you all my very sincere, unvarnished opinions. I'm not trying to be Pollyanna here or spin anybody. This is really what I think. And on Pigeon, I'm quite confident that the reason the court did not take that case is because it's not final yet, and the court almost never will accept a case for review until there's a final decision. And the procedural posture of that case was just not appropriate for Supreme Court review. The Texas Supreme Court issued a very bad opinion. They said very bad things about Obergefell, but that's not the end of the case. They sent the case back to the trial court and told the trial court to do it again. And they didn't direct the trial court to take what we would all think is a bad view of Obergefell. They just said, it's an open question, so do it again, trial court, and you know, you need to decide for yourself whether or not Obergefell compels a different result than you reached the first time around. So they really ducked. I mean, this Texas Supreme Court, they really ducked, punted. They were under an enormous amount of political pressure, like unbelievable political pressure. And that's how they got themselves out of that political dilemma, was by, you know, putting it all back on the trial court. But given that, we don't have a final decision. And the Supreme Court, I mean, they get thousands of petitions every year, you know, so many people asking them to review a case. They are really picky about only taking cases that are final, because they may be wasting their time. Like, we don't yet know how that Texas case is going to ultimately come out. So that, I am really confident that is the only reason they didn't take that case.
Well, I'm loving your optimistic, albeit completely professional, opinion here, Shannon. You're making me personally feel really good. Brody, you have a question.
Yeah, Shannon, let's go back to religious freedom and classifications legally just for a second. As you know, Mississippi's governor signed a religious freedom law into effect. It's in effect. A lot of parallels there with some of the arguments that have been made in the Masterpiece case. Let's talk about the principal focus here by the Alliance Defending Freedom, Liberty Counsel, and a couple of the other Christian right law firms centers around the argument, okay, that we aren't, we're a behavior. We're not a people, okay? How do you get that to a position where we can get set case law? Is that going to have to be something where the high court literally just sits down and says, no, okay, you can't define it that way? Because if you don't define it a certain way, Shannon, it just seems to me that you're opening Pandora's box for these people. Am I mistaken with that? Because, you know, Mississippi is not the only place that's got this religious freedom nonsense going on. There are about, 11 or 12 others as well. You want to take a run at that?
Sure. Although, thank goodness, Mississippi is the only state that has passed a very weird, unusual kind of law they passed, which they basically said that anybody who holds they literally identify three religious beliefs and say if you hold any of these three religious beliefs, you don't have to obey any law that conflicts with those beliefs. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, it's just, I've never seen a law like this before. And the three beliefs, of course, are completely homophobic and transphobic. The beliefs are that marriage is only between a man and a woman, that sex outside of marriage is sinful or immoral, and that your sex is established at birth and you can't change your sex. So it's all about permitting discrimination against gay people, transgender people, and anybody who's having sex outside of marriage. You know, like a woman who becomes pregnant outside of marriage, it would authorize discrimination against her. So it's a pretty shocking, terrible law. Yeah.
It does. It chips away, too, and that was the other thing I was going to follow up with for you real quickly. This also affects women's reproductive rights and women's health issues such as abortion. It's not just us that are at the tip of the spear in terms of these cases. Now, granted, we were the principal targets, but is it not true, Counselor, that the abortion issue factors heavily into this by ADF and these other Christian groups?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You bet. I mean, the two main goals of ADF are to make life completely impossible for LGBT people. I mean, they really want to go back to the days when same-sex intimacy was criminalized, there are no anti-discrimination protections for gay people, and that gay people have to live in fear and hiding. I mean, they want to drive us back completely underground and strip us of any ability to live, you know, openly. And then their other big goal is not even just to get rid of abortion, and they would love to criminalize abortion as well, but to put women back into traditional gender roles. And you can kind of see how these two things go hand in hand. I mean, part of the reason that they are so venomously hateful about LGBT people is because we don't fit within their traditionally gendered world. I mean, they think not only that marriage should be between a man and a woman, but that men should be the ones out, you know, making money and working, and that women should be in the home having babies and children. I mean, they have an incredibly reactionary worldview, and that's the world they're trying to create. I mean, they even want to get rid of contraception, make it impossible for women to access contraception. I mean, this is really scary. I really wish that people would wake up and recognize that they're not just another legal advocacy group. I mean, there's a reason that the Southern Poverty Law Center has designated them as a hate group. And if you just take a moment, think about that. A group that has been, you know, rightly labeled a hate group is literally litigating a case at the U.S. Supreme Court that is about trying to justify discrimination against gay people. It's a pretty scary moment in our nation's history.
Agreed, Rob.
It is. Karen, I think we forced you to hold your behavior question so long, so go for it.
Okay, well, actually, Brody asked my behavior question, so I'm going to throw you for a loop here and ask if you could, Shannon, please talk about briefly, give us a primer on what's going to happen on Monday, December 11th on the trans-military ban lawsuit. Now, especially now that the state of California is a plaintiff, I believe you're helping argue that case.
Yeah, I sure am. I'm so glad you're asking about the transgender military ban cases because, you know, those are also, like, enormously important. So far we're doing very well in getting the courts to enjoin, you know, tell President Trump that he cannot enforce the ban that he wants to reimpose on transgender service members. We've now had two courts, a federal court in D.C. and then a federal court in Maryland, have both issued very similar orders saying, no, this is unconstitutional, you cannot do this. There's two other cases out there challenging the ban, and one of them is in Riverside, California, and the state of California has intervened in that case, and the court has let them in. So they're now a full party alongside the transgender service members who are plaintiffs in that case, which is wonderful. I mean, I can't tell you how good it feels and how important it is to have the state of California standing mm-hmm. alongside of us in that case
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
telling the courts, hey, this ban would hurt. I mean, they're in the case because obviously there's a lot of service members and transgender service members in California, but it also, if the ban stays in effect, it directly requires California ROTC programs and California, like, National Guard programs to discriminate against transgender people. So that sets mm-hmm. up a direct conflict with California's own anti-discrimination law. So that's why in their case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so we have a hearing Monday to hopefully we will get the judge in that case to issue a similar order saying that the ban is unconstitutional and that it cannot be enforced. I sure hope that's what happens.
And what happens?
Don, you've got a question.
But Karen, finish her. Karen, go ahead.
What happens if it's declared unconstitutional? Does that case then go to appellate and the Supreme Court? What happens next after that?
Yeah, we should all be very familiar with this situation
yeah.
because it's going to be just like the marriage cases,
mm-hmm.
the same way that people challenged, DOMA, another, you know, bad federal law. There were multiple lawsuits, and then one of them, Edie Winter's case, eventually went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. That's likely what will happen here as well. You know, yes, we'll the government has already appealed the D.C. and the Maryland decisions. They'll go up to the D.C. Circuit Court and to the Fourth Circuit, and I'm sure that they're going to appeal the decisions, what will hopefully be similarly positive decisions out of Washington and California, and that'll go up to the Ninth Circuit. And then, you know, it's highly likely that this issue will eventually be decided by the Supreme Court.
Thank you.
Shannon, I'm really delighted.
Question?
Thank you. I'm really delighted to pick your brain on this because I read an op-ed this week on CNN.com about the Masterpiece case. And what this person wrote was, it has nothing to do with cake and everything to do with civil rights. And the author is Gavin Grimm. And when you bring up the trans military case, I automatically think of Gavin and his failed attempt to get the Supreme Court to, you know, basically put him where he should be, which is wherever the hell he wants to go. And I just wonder if you could just talk a little bit about where we stand on trans rights outside, beyond trans military, in terms of the courts. It's been a very discouraging time for both girls and men like you and me.
It has been. I mean, having the Trump administration come right out of the gate, start attacking transgender people all over the place and repealing protections that had been established under President Obama has been very scary and very disconcerting, to say the least. I will say, though, that the courts, in contrast, so far have been really standing up for us. So even after President Trump, for example, rescinded the very strong guidance that the Department of Education had put out about transgender students under President Obama, that has not hurt us in the courts. and the courts are continuing to enforce the actual statute, Title IX, in a way that protects transgender students. So we, for example, have got a very powerful decision on that issue from the Seventh Circuit earlier this year, where they just emphatically held that schools must respect the gender identity of transgender students, including letting them use the right bathrooms that correspond to their gender identity. And the school district in that case has actually asked the Supreme Court to review that decision. So that's something else to be aware of, and you know, keep your eyes open for any new. I'm sure there'll be news when the court either rejects, says no, we're not going to take the case, or I mean, if they do take it, that's big. That would be really, really important. Going to be another really important case for our community. But we're doing well. We're doing well in the court system. So, including, like we were just talking about in the transgender military cases. And I'll just say one other quick thing about that. There, even though it's terrifying, it's horrible what President Trump is doing. It has been. I can't tell you how horrible it's been for service members who are transgender, because that's a hard, that's a hard job to start with.
And
then to have, your future just completely being held in limbo and your integrity and, skills being attacked by the president of the United States. That's been a miserable experience for those folks. But I think there has been a silver lining for our community in that, I think most people in the public, they would have never in a million years even known that there are transgender service members.
Mm-hmm.
And now they do know that. And it has given us a chance to show the world that there are transgender people who are very capably serving our country in the military. And I actually think these cases and this whole controversy has probably done more to accelerate public support for transgender people and public understanding of transgender people than anything else. So mm-hmm. as long as we keep winning, I actually think we're going to come out ahead.
That's fantastic. Brody, you had a point that you wanted to make?
Yeah, I just, as we're getting down here, Shannon, I just wanted to let our listeners know just the terribly important work that the National Center for Lesbian Rights does. And I'm actually very grateful for you and Kate Kendall and the crew. I think we'd agree on the fact that Kate's a definite rock star. But, if people need to reach out to you guys, I would highly recommend them doing so, because you guys do yeoman work for the community. You and Lambda Legal and Little Glad, all three of you guys. Rob?
Yeah, I kind of want to echo everybody else on the panel here are seasoned journalists who've worked with you before, Shannon, and I'm kind of the newbie, and I just have to tell you, I'm like a huge, huge fan of your work, and I appreciate everything that you've done for the community as a whole with your work, and cannot say enough about that. Tonight, I am just absolutely thrilled that you joined us. You've been absolutely brilliant. Every question of we could have done a whole show on, and I kind of apologize that we have to keep it so moving and so siloed, but you've been absolutely brilliant, and I really want and hope that you come back and talk to us again. Because, like I said, you opened up so many different doors, we could have gone on and on. So thank you so, so much for that. And with that, I'll ask you like kind of a final question in our last minute here. What have we not asked about this case that we need to make a point about?
I can't think of a darn thing. This has been such a pleasure. I mean, this has really been so fun. I mean, you all are so well informed about what's going on, and for that reason, we're able to ask such exactly the right questions. And it's such a pleasure. And it's one of the things that I really value about our community is I think people do try to keep themselves informed, and you all as journalists are playing such an important role in making that possible and kind of translating for folks, what's happening in the courts and what that means in the real world and for their lives. And I feel like a real partnership with all of you in that endeavor to try to help people understand what's going on. So thanks so much for all of your work.
Thank you, Shannon. Thank you,
Kate. Thank you so much. And with
that,
we have to say goodnight. We are at the end of the show, and Thank you all for listening. You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio. We will be back here again next week, Thursday, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Also listen to Out in Santa Cruz on WKSCO.com, Saturdays, 7 p.m. Pacific Time and 10 p.m. Eastern Time. More exciting topics, and we can't wait to talk to you then.